Good morrow!
Welcome back to Shaky Understanding.
I'm Beverly.
I'm Allison.
So today we are talking about The Winter's Tale.
Ooh la la!
Which is the first play we've done that I haven't read.
And I have!
What?
Well, almost Shakespearean in a way. I'm dressing up and pretending that I know things. So I'm gonna try my best to give you some Shakespeare abridged. It's coming from Allison today, guys, so just bear with me. So, at the start of the play, we have King Leontes of Sicily, and he is begging his childhood friend, King Polixenes of Bohemia, to extend his visit. And Polixenes is protesting. He's like, nah, I've been away from my kingdom for so long, guys. It's been like 9 months. I totally gotta get out of here. But after Leontes' pregnant wife, Hermione, pleads with Polixenes to stay, he agrees he'll stay a little bit longer. And Leontes has kind of seen this go down, even though he asked Hermione to do it, and he gets a little bit jealous. He gets a little bit suspicious of his wife and thinks maybe she's been cheating on him with Polixenes. So he orders his loyal servant, Camillo, to poison Polixenes, the Bohemian king. But instead, Camillo warns Polixenes of this whole plot, and the two of them flee the country. They run away. After they escape, King Leontes is furious, and he now publicly accuses his wife of cheating on him, of infidelity, and he declares that the child that she is pregnant has got to be illegitimate, and it's not his own son. So he throws Hermione in prison over the protest of all the nobles who are like, hey, I don't think this is real, bro. Like, slow down. He's like, no, I'm doing it. He throws her in prison. And he sends for the Oracle of Delphi to confirm his suspicions. So we get a little bit of magic going on. Meanwhile, while he's waiting for the Oracle to arrive, the queen gives birth to a girl, and her loyal friend Paulina brings the baby to the king, saying, hey, look at this innocent little baby, calm down and just love it. It's just a cute baby. Don't worry about it. And the king is like, no, I'm still super mad. I'm not going to listen to you. And he orders Paulina's husband, Lord Antigonus, to take the child and just abandon it in some desolate place. Just drop it somewhere. While Antigonus is gone, taking this child and abandoning it, the answers come from the oracles of Delphi, at Delphi, and it says Hermione and Polixenes are innocent. They were not cheating on each other. Basically, King, you were wrong. And Leontes will have no heir until his lost daughter is found. And as this nude is revealed, word comes that Leontes' son has died of some sort of wasting sickness brought on by the accusations against his mother. It's like tortured him and now he's dead. So, things are going downhill fast for King Leontes. Hermione falls in a swoon, is carried away by Paulina, and then Paulina comes back and reports that the queen is dead due to a broken heart, and Leontes starts to feel real bad about all the trouble that he's caused. Antigonus, meanwhile, has abandoned the baby on the Bohemian coast, reporting that Hermione has appeared to him in a dream and bade him name the girl Perdita and leave gold and other tokens on her person. And so he does, but then he gets killed by a bear. We're going to revisit that point later, so just remember, exit pursued by a bear, he's dead. 16 years pass while Perdita is raised by a kindly shepherd, and the son of Polixenes, Prince Florizel, falls in love with Perdita. His father and Camillo, attending a sheep shearing in disguise, watch as Florizel and Perdita are betrothed, and then tearing off the disguise, Polixenes orders his son never to see the shepherd's daughter again because you're a prince. How dare you fall in love with a shepherd's daughter? No, no, no. With the aid of Camillo, however, who really just wants to go home after 16 years, Florizel and Perdita take a ship for Sicily. And after using some clothes that they get from this crazy guy, Autolycus, who's like super weird and I have a lot of thoughts on him to share later, they get on the ship, they disguise, they sail off, they land in Sicily. and they meet King Leontes, who still is in mourning, even after 16 years, and he greets the son of his old friend, King Polixenes, and Florizel pretends to be on, like, a diplomatic mission from his father. He's like, it's cool that I'm here. Don't even worry about it. But his cover's blown when his dad actually shows up and is like, hey, no, that's not real. He ran away. So what happens next is told by some gentlemen that come on stage, and they tell us that the shepherd has recounted this story of how he found Perdita just abandoned in the wilderness with some golden tokens in her blanket and raised her. And King Leontes has realized that this is his daughter, and everyone's super happy. Leads to some general rejoicing and feasting and partying. And then the entire company then goes to Paulina's house in the country, where they're seeing a statue of Hermione that's recently been finished, and they're gonna check it out. So this statue, when they go see it, King Leontes is like, yo, this statue is really dope. It looks really lifelike. It looks like it's breathing. And Paulina's like, don't touch it. It's a statue, and it's just really lifelike paint, but the paint is wet, so don't touch it. But then he does touch it, and the statue comes to life, and it is Hermione restored to life magically? Question mark? After 16 years. And as the play ends, Paulina and Camillo are engaged, and the whole company celebrates the miracle, and everyone lives happily ever after. The end.
Great success.
How'd I do?
You did very well. You get a gold star.
Thank you, SparkNotes.
So anyway, we have a special guest with us here today. We have Hermione herself.
Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Hi. I won't even ask how you got here, because apparently you can live forever.
Yes, I transcend time.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
All right.
I got some intense questions.
I'm sure you
do. Even though I'm supposed to be the expert this week, I got serious thoughts going down.
No, that's real. This is a very interesting play. Your story is very interesting.
Yeah, it's super interesting. You know how you were talking about fools, and there's like fools that are really fools, and then fools that are don't know that they're fools? You know what I mean?
So there are fools that are smart and are making clever jokes.
Right.
And there are fools that are just like doofuses.
Mm-hmm.
A la Much Ado with Dogberry.
Totally. So here's my question. Between the actual clown, who's just called Clown, mm-hmm. in my version anyway, and the shepherd, and Autolycus, who is the fool? They're like all crazy fools to me. Do you get what I'm saying?
I don't even remember where Clown comes in.
He comes in, and he's talking to the shepherd and Autolycus. They're like,
Is the clown the shepherd's son?
Yeah, I have the Folgers version. It's the shepherd's son in the Folgers version.
Oh, okay. See, my version called it
Clown.
That was just a thought that I had, because Autolycus is like the most bizarre character, for real. Do you just love him? I can see it on your face. I can see you or your tongue waiting to be like, he's my favorite.
Okay, so I've been watching Game of Thrones right now, clearly.
Right.
And I recently realized that Bronn is one of my favorite characters ever.
Oh, but they're not the same.
But he like...
Autolycus is way stupider than Bronn. Way stupider.
I don't know if he's stupid. He just, like, has a scheme all the time. That's, like, his thing.
Yeah, but his schemes don't usually go off very well. Like,
he made a bunch of money.
Like, if Bronn had a scheme, he would get shit done. Have you seen that meme where it's, like, a cartoon dog sitting in a living room that's on fire? And he's like...
This is fine.
This is fine. That's all. I feel like that's the meme of Autolycus. That's his, like, spirit meme of, like, this is fine. I have no money. I have no clothes. There's a bear that just ate someone. This is fine. This is fine. It's like, it's not fine, bro.
He rolls with the punches, man.
He doesn't even really do anything, ever.
Yeah, it's like he serves no purpose in the plot. I swear to God, it was somebody who was like, Shakespeare, you better write me a good plot this time. And he's like,
he
there
like,
owes
someone money.
Yes, I'm so serious. He does not serve a great purpose in the plot. Is the King Leontes, I'd love to get your thoughts on
right.
this, Hermione.
Your
is
husband.
He... Do you feel like he's setting you up in Act 1 right away? When does he become jealous of you?
That's an interesting question. Looking back on it, I don't feel like he was intentionally manipulating me into making it seem evident that I was cheating on him in any way. But I do think that I have a hostess in me that I learned in my Russian culture because I'm the daughter of the Emperor of Russia. So I have a different way of hosting and a different way of welcoming people than is customary for Italians. And I think that simply, maybe he was already a little bit suspicious because Polixenes and I enjoy each other's company. In that moment where he did accuse me and he did confront me, I feel like it was a byproduct of him just seeing the two of us talk and him being really disturbed and uncomfortable with it. And I really think that it's a big lesson about jealousy and, and what can happen when you let jealousy get the best of you. Because for him, he really, it really only takes one pebble to drop with jealousy, and then it infects everything.
I have another question for you since we're chatting with you now that's just occurred to me. What were you doing for 16 years?
I was living in Paulina's house and she was taking care of me. She had a back cottage and she just kind of hid me there because nobody ever goes to her house unless they are invited. And it's not within...
Like my house.
It's not within the bounds of the kingdom because it's out in the country. It's in the countryside of Italy. And so in order to get there, you have to take horses and carriages, and it's a long journey, and it can take, I believe, about 7 hours to get to her house. So it would be difficult to find me. And because she is so involved with the kingdom, she felt like that was a safe place to keep me, so she would know if anybody was coming.
So you just got to retire into the Italian countryside for 16 years? Because that's pretty amazing.
It was. It's so conflicting because as amazing as it was be recovering from having my baby taken away and my son just dying all at the same time and then also really being betrayed by the love of my life. There were elements of it that I enjoyed, but I really missed my old life a lot of the time, and I was used to a lot of luxury in the kingdom that I didn't get to have in the country. But other than that, it was, at least I had my friend.
Yeah.
Why does Polixenes and Hermione, and even King Leontes for that matter, why is everybody waiting 16 years to do anything? You never take the opportunity to go down to the kingdom. Paulina never takes the opportunity to show this statue for 16 years. I mean, obviously, Polixenes is going back because his son is, like, running off with what he thinks is a shepherd's daughter off to Sicily. But why does he never in 16 years think to himself, you know, I should go mend things with my old friend? Like, 16 years is a dang long time.
I think I'm going to go lean back towards the jealousy conversation because I think that Leontes was so angry for such a long period of time that yes, he was sad when I died, but his anger and his vitriol when that happened, it lasted a really long time. And only recently did Paulina feel like it was even safe to bring me back around him, I think.
Yeah, but I feel like he does. Prior to those 16 years passing, when he hears that his son has died, he changes his mind pretty quick from being like, I'm angry and I hate everyone and everyone's cheating on me, to being instantly repentant. And it still takes such a long time. So maybe it's jealousy and shame?
I think part of it's definitely that Paulina thinks he should suffer, too. Because...
Well, Paulina's dope.
Paulina, number one homie, is
number
like,
one homie.
You don't treat my girl like that. You don't get to treat my girl like that.
Don't make me snap my fingers in a Z formation.
And you can tell that she really does weigh on him, especially in all those scenes when he's like, maybe I should marry again. She's like, oh, I know you're not going to marry again. Oh, I know you wouldn't do that to Hermione. You're not allowed to marry till I find you someone, and it will be as good, if not better, than Hermione.
Right.
And then we later find out that it is Hermione.
It is exactly Hermione.
She had a plan all along.
She really is the best friend that anybody could ask for because of the way she handled the situation. Mm-hmm. She's so great in emergencies. She came up with this brilliant plan so quickly, and she's just an incredible friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's definitely number one homie.
Number one homie.
For real.
Paulina forever. But yeah, and then as far as Polixenes goes, I don't know if you've ever dealt with someone who's jealous or who thinks you did something wrong to them when you did nothing, but you don't go back to that friend until they come.
Oh, I don't ever go back to that friend.
Yeah. I had a situation where someone was super passive aggressive with me and thought all of these things that I did were, like, against this person, and I mean, we don't talk. That's just the long and the short of it. There's no logically arguing with someone who's doing themselves the problem, which
that's
is what jealousy is. It's doing to your, it's making a problem for yourself.
It's like anger, drinking poison and expecting the other person to die.
Ooh.
I mean, that's not original to me.
I think also to answer your question about why has it been 16 years, the magnitude of the betrayal that I went through, and in that trial where the words of the oracle were presented, and the oracle vouched for me,
right,
and said she's faithful. I have the quote. The note said, "Hermione is chaste, Polixenes blameless, Camilo a true subject, Leontes a jealous tyrant. His innocent babe truly begotten, and the king shall live without an heir if that which is lost be not found." And so this was read in front of him, and all the nobles were around, and I was there, and Leontes heard it and said, "There's no truth in that at all."
Shame.
Shame.
Shame. Shame.
Shame. It's Game of Thrones. Yeah, and, like, that's the word of God.
Yeah.
Because that's Apollo.
Totally.
Which is their god. So him saying no to that is like, bro,
you better calm
lying
down
to yourself.
I just also pulled a couple quotes that, when I was reading, just really struck me. Because even though Spark Notes is great, like, Cliff Notes is great, you can totally, like, Wikipedia, whatever, there are just so many things that just the words just hit you. Mm. And it's taken me a while to learn to appreciate that. But reading these plays with you and kind of getting attuned to the language has really helped me stop and listen to, like, my inner voice when I'm reading it. Mm. So this is one of my favorites that I found, which was that honorable grief lodged here, which burns worse than tears drown. I think it's Hermione.
Sounds like.
I think it's something that you say when you're being accused. Because I had actually been doing some writing and writing about that feeling when you want to cry and you feel like crying, but you can't let it out. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, way worse than crying. And that's exactly what he's saying here. So in, like, 500 years, nothing in human nature has changed. That feeling of suffocation in your chest when you just want nothing more than to, like, rage and scream and bawl your eyes out, but you can't do it for whatever reason. So that's a very real moment that I had. I also just really like this, and I feel like I want to say it to any dude that's being a dick from here on out, which is, his garments are rich, but he wears them not handsomely. Such a burn! Love it!
Oh,
so my new fave. That might be said by Paulina, number one homie. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
It's good, though.
Also great is, it is an heretic that makes the fire, not she which burns in it. So good. So good.
And I think also what you said about being in front of a bunch of nobles and needing to withhold my reputation as queen and needing to be strong even though all of this is happening.
One thing I wanted to say is how much of a parallel this is to, funnily enough, Much Ado About Nothing. Because
very similar.
The hero storyline of being shamed publicly and wrongly and having to pretend death and have a rebirth as something new, magically retransformed.
Right.
Because if you just come back and say, "Hey, I'm back from the countryside," then there's still all this shame hanging on you. But if it's sort of wrapped in this thing of, "Oh no, that old hero is dead." Like, that's the quote from Much Ado. Old hero is dead, this is new hero. And with you, it's she's been transformed from this statue form when she was chased the whole time.
Yeah.
That's so important to her reputation, which is everything to a woman in Shakespeare's time. A lot of the value held in women is for their minds and their reputation. And their status, I should say. And since she's already queen, she's got that covered. She's clearly well-spoken. Done. Check. Had to recover her reputation.
Right. How did you feel when the king finally came back and saw you after those 16 years? I mean, you said he was the love of your life. Like, that is such a huge moment.
Yeah, I think because he had had enough time to overcome his anger and jealousy, and that there was something really beautiful about getting to see him again and getting to see my daughter for the first time since she was a baby. I think the moment of my family suddenly being together felt more like a dream than anything else, because I never really felt like that would ever happen in the 16 years I was locked away from them, basically. Moving, sad, happy, you know, everything. It makes me want to cry thinking about it, because it just, everything all at the same time.
The other parallel I was thinking of is clearly Othello.
Yeah.
Another play that deals heavily with jealousy.
Although there's no rebirth.
No rebirth. But funnily enough, when I was researching it, this was based off another play.
Yeah.
Sorry, Shakespeare wrote it based off another play where he does end up killing himself in the end. The character of Leontes is, like, in the original, like, it's different storyline, but similar. Jealous, like, I think probably Hermione probably dies for real. I don't know, though. But Leontes ends up killing himself.
Yeah, it's like a play and a story that was all kind of written at the same time that he was kind of stealing from.
Yeah. The other one I was thinking of, actually, is King Lear. Because he has a big speech at the beginning being like, you did this wrong and I'm right. And then it's shown so clearly to be wrong and has to suffer for it.
After I thought back on this story,
it
reminded me of Sleeping Beauty. And the, isn't it 16 years that she's away?
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Oh, I remembered something I was going to say, which is that all the Shakespeare stories that you're referencing, all those stories, all have intense lessons in common in terms of man and misunderstanding and jealousy and letting it get out of control and the spiral that you can go into if you don't check yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's hard.
Yeah, and just not listening to any outside voices. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the descent into madness in all of those stories. Mm-hmm. Because in all of them, someone says,
hey, I think you're doing this wrong.
Yeah. I don't think that's what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And every time they're like, no, trust me. And then it goes wrong.
Yeah. Very true.
And I think with faith in relationships, specifically the word faith, like so much faith is necessary to keep a marriage together for such a long period of time. And you can't be in a relationship like this, like my relationship with Leontes, and question the person you're with. You can't do
that.
How
long were you together?
Prior to this, we had a son, and he's old enough to talk. My son's 7, so we've been together for 8 years. I was kind of shipped here for an arranged marriage by my father, and I had never met Leontes. My father and I took a ship all the way to Italy, introduced me to Leontes, and then was there for the wedding. My father died shortly after.
Mm. So you guys hit it off. I mean, it seems like you have a great relationship.
Yes,
now.
I got very lucky. Sometimes that happens with arranged marriages, that you actually do fall in love with the person that you're destined to be with. So.
Yeah.
Do you know of any modern adaptations?
I don't know of any modern adaptations, really. I mean, obviously there's some tropes, you know, just of jealousy getting in the way of things.
I saw online there was one movie version. I've never seen it, and it didn't look like it had a great rating, so I don't know.
Okay.
I don't think this play would translate very well to a movie.
No.
At all.
You know what I think it would translate well to?
What?
A musical.
Ooh. Actually, it would.
It would.
It would, because it's just, here's the thing, it's just bizarre enough for the musical to enhance it rather than, like, take away from it.
True.
And also, the thing about musicals is that they're so wonderful, and when they're done right, the actor or the character starts singing because the emotion becomes so strong that they can no longer express themselves in normal speech. And there's so many emotional, climactic moments in this play that would be so enhanced. I mean, Hermione would have some incredible ballads.
Paulina would have
a dope number.
She would be a belting number, being like, you need to think about what you're doing.
Yeah.
It might be because I'm addicted to Hamilton.
It's
definitely the first thing I thought.
Even Hermione is into Hamilton, y'all.
It's fine. I mean, I think somebody should do it. Because it's also in public domain. So anybody who wrote a musical could just write the music.
There's been a couple of Shakespeare musicals. The only one I've seen is Like You Like It, the 80s version of As You Like It. That's a musical.
That sounds great.
That takes place in a ball.
That sounds amazing. Cool. So I'm also talking about technical aspect this week. Heyo. So one of the most famous Shakespearean quotes, even though it's not a line of dialogue said by a character, is just "exit pursued by a bear." Mm. And this is from Winter's Tale. It's famous for a couple of reasons. One, because there are not a lot of stage directions in Shakespeare's plays, except for, like, enter, exit, sit down.
Dies.
Stabs.
Stabs.
Things of that nature.
They kiss.
They kiss. That's true. That's in there. So.
And it's right after he sets the baby down.
It is. It is exactly right after he sets the baby down. So Lord Antigonus has been sent to take the baby off and kind of abandon it in the woods. He sets the baby down. I think he says a little prayer, and then he exits, pursued by a bear. And then we hear later that he's been eaten by a bear. That's when Autolycus comes in and is like, somebody just got eaten by a bear. Why doesn't he leave? I'm telling you, he's stupid.
He actually says to the baby, too, I have to go. There's a bear.
There's a bear. So
and leaves the
there.
Baby on the ground.
Right.
Autolycus has got to look out for number one. Okay, that's all I'm saying.
So there's kind of a trope named after this now called Exit Pursued by a Bear, and it's a trope. It's a method of dispatching a villain or dispatching a character while keeping the hero's hands clean. So you are not the one necessarily pulling the trigger and killing someone, but magically they're dead.
Mm, interesting.
So the difference is that, you know, the hero then can, the obstacle can be removed without losing any karma for the hero. So the death often would happen entirely off screen with the villains. You know, he might be impaled or mauled or something, and you could sometimes see it, a silhouette, a shadow of it, or you would just hear it, but it's not shown directly to you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's essentially making a plot point without having. It's almost like Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah. But to move the plot forward as
but
opposed
with murder.
To solve the problem.
Yeah, but with murder.
With murder.
With death.
Deus Ex Murder.
Deus Ex Murder. That's a great name for a band. We're on fire. So the source that we were talking about, Winter's Tale, is based on a play and also kind of a book that was floating around at the same time, but the bear is not in that story either. But Shakespeare may have been inspired to introduce this bear by Musidorus, which was a chivalric romance which had been revived at court around 1610, and that had scenes featuring a bear. And it's also been speculated that Shakespeare was responsible for writing some additional scenes for the revival of this play, and that live bears would have been used in the performance at this time, specifically polar bear cubs, belonging to King James, though the evidence is not totally conclusive.
So dope.
So.
But also terrible.
So who knows?
Well,
but
also,
yeah, sad for the polar bears.
Bear baiting was a big sport at this time, too. And
yes.
I think when I've seen pictures of the map in terms of where the theater was versus where the bear baiting facility was,
they
were
close.
Pretty close by.
It was next to each other.
There you go.
Bear baiting is a sport they used to do where they basically, like, would have a bear tied to something and dogs would attack it and, like, people would get excited about it. It was really sad. But that was the thing.
And then they
throw
in a Brienne of Tarth.
You know what's weird? Right after the bear chases him off stage is that scene between the clown and, is it between the clown and the shepherd?
Yeah, it's the shepherd's son.
Yeah,
and, the shepherd.
And they're just like, what up? There's a bear. It just ate someone, but probably we're fine.
And they decide that probably the best thing would be is to stop the bear from eating the rest of him and, like, go get the remains of the body and bury it.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's
really strange.
The other thing that occurred to me when we were talking, because you were saying you, Hermione, came on a ship from Russia, and Bohemia is near Russia? Do we know where it might be? The only thing I'm bringing up is that the bear is a very strong Russian symbol as well. I don't think this is Shakespeare's intention because at that time, I don't know if bears were known as a Russian symbol even at that time or how much knowledge Shakespeare would have had on that.
Hmm.
But as a modern day adaptation, I'm just saying the bear could have an awesome song in the musical. That's all in Russian.
Oh, we gotta write this. We need to cut all this out of the podcast to write this musical. Oh my god.
Where is Bohemia? If it's near Russia.
Do we want to Google? Because it is a real place. I actually did a little bit of research and I heard that Shakespeare wrote this play to present to the current king's daughter, who was marrying a guy that was going to become the king of Bohemia. Because their storyline isn't in the play it's based off of either, I don't think. The Perdita Florenzel.
It's a region encompassing the Western Czech Republic.
Oh, it's the Russian Czech Republic.
Czech Republic.
Russian Czech Republic.
Slovakia.
Then it makes sense that the Russian bear wouldn't kill the half-Russian baby.
There you go.
See?
Sense the Russian blood.
And they're also like up near Russia, which is where the bear happens. Because they're in Bohemia, right?
See?
Boom.
Boom.
I have one thing that we haven't talked about. I'm curious about. In the story is the moment where it's Antigonus talks about the dream he had where I came to him in his sleep in all white and I told him that the baby's name was to be Perdita and I told him where to take the baby exactly. Oh. And it's just such an interesting thing because
do you think that was you for real?
Yeah, because he's married to Paulina and I think Paulina had this brilliant plan where she was like, let's dress you up and he does. He doesn't know that you're living here yet because she's hid me in the back house somehow.
That's awesome.
That's really smart.
Also, great song for the musical. I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
What do you think about time?
About time in
character,
general?
The character Time.
Oh.
I would like to call him plot device. I think that's my struggle with the play overall is this huge time gap, and while I definitely respect that there is some time needed to heal kind of these wounds and learn lessons, I just feel like 16 years is so long. It does feel a little bit like, I need to wait until they're old enough that they can be married and everyone will have a happy ending.
And also immediately after Time says it's been 16 years, Camilo says, 15 years since I've been. And so even the time...
You don't really need it.
There's a bunch of plays where time passes and you don't have someone being like, I am time and it is passing. Like Julius Caesar, the second half of Julius Caesar where they're all fighting, that's like years later.
How many years though?
A couple, because they talk about how long they've been fighting. It's not 16, but
yeah,
still.
I think also the character of time in this play may also kind of serve that purpose for the people who are either slow on the uptake or just walking in. Because I don't know, how strict was seating in Shakespeare's
day?
Honestly,
it also might have been, like, costume change.
True.
It might have been, like, people changing characters and stuff.
Yeah. But do you know what I mean? Because people used to be able to walk in and out of movie theaters at any time until Psycho was released. I believe it's Psycho. And then Alfred Hitchcock was like, no. If they walk in halfway through, the movie's going to be ruined. You have to only let people in when I say. And then kick them out. And then start again. Right. And that's really where our modern day ideas of going to a movie at a set start time comes from. Because you hear, you know, your grandparents, at least our grandparents, your great, great, great grandchildren, talk about going to the movies in the 30s and 40s. And they'd pay a dime and they'd go and they'd sit all day. And it'd be a cartoon and then a newsreel and then a this. Because there was no set start and finish time. So I am just curious, do you even know, were plays like that in Shakespeare's time, or was it like the play starts at 8 and the curtain would go up at 8?
I don't know if people could come and leave.
Yeah,
I bet they could
either.
For the groundlings areas.
That's what
I'm sure
thinking.
They could for the seats. And it's like royalty sat up there and rich people. I feel like they
probably wouldn't come and go.
Right.
But that's what I'm saying. Time may be for the groundlings.
And then one thing I wanted to say too, this story is so strange because it has so many sad things. You're just talking about, like, your son dies and your love of your life talks to you, but it's, like, listed under comedies or romances. Because there's tragedies and comedies in Shakespeare, but there's also this weird one called romances.
I'd say it's more of a romance. I was going to say it's, like, the dark comedy or the dramatic version of Much Ado is how I would...
I love that quote in the middle of it where Mamilius is asking for a story from his mother and she says, like, a sad tale's best for winter.
Mm.
So we're going to read a scene from your life a little bit. We're going to read from Act 1, Scene 2. This is when Leontes, Polixenes, and Hermione are all hanging out. And Leontes has asked Polixenes to stay longer just because they're really good friends. And he wants to hang out with his friends some more. And then Hermione asks him, and this is sort of the interaction that
lights Leontes on this tirade of jealousy.
To tell he longs to see his son more strong, but let him say so then, and let him go. But let him swear so, and he shall not stay. We'll thwack him hence with distaffs. Yet of your royal presence I'll adventure the borrow of a week. When at Bohemia you take my lord, I'll give him my commission to let him there a month behind the guest, prefixed for parting. Yet good deed, Leontes. I love thee, not a jar of the clock behind. What lady she her lord? You'll stay?
No, madam.
Nay, but you will.
I mean not, verily.
Verily? You put me off with limber vows. But I, though you would seek the atmosphere of the stars with oaths, should yet say, sir, no going. Verily. You shall not go. A lady's verily is as potent as a lord's. Will you go yet? Force me to keep you as a prisoner, not like a guest. So you shall pay your fees when you depart and save your thanks. How say you? My prisoner or my guest? By your dread, verily, one of them you shall be.
Your guest then, madam. To be your prisoner should import offending, which is for me less easy to commit than you to punish.
Not your jailer, then, but your kind hostess. Come, I'll question you of my lord's tricks and yours when you were boys. You were pretty lordlings then.
We were, fair queen, two lads that thought there was no more behind. But such a day tomorrow as today, as to be boy eternal.
Was not my lord the verier wag of the two?
We were as twin lambs that did frisk in the sun, and bleat the one at the other. What we changed was innocence for innocence. We knew not the doctrine of ill-doing, nor dreamed that any did. Had we pursued that life, and our weak spirits never been higher reared with stronger blood, we should have answered heaven, boldly, not guilty. The imposition cleared, hereditary ours.
By this we gather you have tripped since.
Oh, my most sacred lady, temptations have since then been born to us, for in those unfledged days when my wife a girl, your precious self had then not crossed the eyes of my young playfellow.
Grace to boot, of this make no conclusion, lest you say your queen and I are devils. Yet go on. The offenses we have made, you do, we'll answer. If you first sinned with us, and that with us, you did continue fault, and that you slipped not with any but with us.
Awesome.
Thanks so much for stepping through time once again to speak with us, Hermione. Yeah. It's been a pleasure having you.
It's been lovely to be here talking to you.
Yeah.
Shaky Understanding is now a production of Ursula Major Productions, which also brings you The Bitchery of History.
So check that out. I'm Beverly.
This is Allison.
Deuces, peasants!
To our house and, like, breaks in and is like...
I'm gonna read it. Let's read it. Let's not talk about it. I wanna read it.
It's really good.
Okay. I'm telling you not to talk about it because I want to read it. That you should be respecting
that. I know.
We're married, in case you couldn't tell.
Oh, I could tell.